Strange. You think you know how the world works? What if I told you the reality you know is one of many?
This doesn't make any sense.
Not everything does. Not everything has to. Through the mystic arts, we harness energy and shape reality. We travel great distances in an instant.
How do I get from here to there?
How did you become a doctor?
Study and practice. Here's a bit. There's a strength to him.
But is he ready?
Be careful which paths you travel down, Strange. Stronger men than you have lost their way. I am death. Bring pain. You'll die protecting this world.
I can't do this.
There is no other way.
I've spent so many years peering through time. Looking for you.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisout. Today, we're going to talk about the film Doctor Strange. I'm not talking about the new one. That's next week. Next week, we're talking about Doctor Strange 2. Today, we are talking about Doctor Strange 1. I don't know what the long title is. You know what I'm saying. We're not going to bother looking it up. Now, of course, I hadn't seen this movie because I'm not a Marvel nerd. I don't watch these movies when they drop. But when the second one dropped, I got so many requests that I thought, okay, fine. And I watched the first one, so I knew what was happening in the storyline. Then I went to the dreaded theater, watched the second one, and me oh my, was I surprised by all of the occult symbolism in these two films. Which means we're going to cover this topic. It's a massive, massive topic. I don't have time to screw around. There's so much to talk about. So we're going to break this up into two shows. The first one's going to be about the first film. And we're going to cover all these topics. Lucifer, Baphomet, Tibet, all-seeing eyes, Saturn as the dark dimension, the doors of perception, which fits into the multiverse theory of Doctor Strange 2. And we'll, of course, talk about who this character is. Who is Doctor Strange? Who is he based upon? I will tell you, he's based upon some very important occultists that gave us Western occult practices and, most importantly, sex magic. Yes, we're going to talk about it. Should you watch this movie? If you haven't seen it, because I'm obviously going to spoil the plot today for you, should you watch it? Well, it's a Marvel movie. If you've seen one, you've seen them all. This is from 2016, so you've had several years to watch it. If you haven't seen it by now, you probably are like me and you don't care. No, you don't have to watch it. But if you're into Marvel, you've already seen it probably. It's just under 2 hours. It's fine. Who's in it? Old Benedict Cumberbatch there. Fun fact, he's got the whitest name on the whole planet. His full name is Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch. He was born into British military and government blood because his family was full of commanders of the Navy and British diplomats, and his actual parents were both actors. So this guy was destined for greatness, apparently. His mom was in a sci-fi show in the 70s called UFO, and she was also in a show called The Avengers, which ironically is not about Marvel superheroes. It was about espionage. Then we also have the other big name in this one, Rachel McAdams. It's America's sweetheart from Canada. Now, her parents, they were a nurse and a truck driver. That's some real Jack and Diane story right there, okay? Says when she was a kid, she wanted to act. She attended Disney and Shakespeare summer camps. Uh-oh. Then in 2002, she made her film debut in The Hot Chick. Then on to greatness with Mean Girls, The Notebook, Wedding Crashers, all great films. Fun fact, Ryan Gosling was actually going to be the guy to play Doctor Strange. How fun would that have been if he would have got that role? But he didn't. And what's this first film all about? Well, it's basically the origin story of Doctor Strange in the new Marvel Universe. Let's get into it. Plot spoilers coming. You've been warned. It starts out, there's some, you know, bad guys doing little sorcery things at a compound called the Carmitage. They pronounce it real weird in the movie. I had to have the subtitles. Carmitage or something? I don't know. Anyway. They're stealing some secret pages from some magical book, a grimoire, a spell book, if you will. And this sets up the whole plot of the film. And you'll eventually figure out who these bad guys are. It doesn't matter right now. Then we're introduced to Dr. Stephen Strange. He is an arrogant neurosurgeon, and he's got the magic hands, all right? He's got the magic hands, and he's rewarded handsomely for it. So he goes to his fancy little home, and if you look very closely, you will see that, and I'll put the photo on the Instagram, like and subscribe, link in the show notes as always. The Instagram handle is at Isaac Weishaupt. If you look very closely, in his cabinet at home, he's got a caduceus. Now, he is a medical doctor, and that is the symbol for medicine, but this comes from an occult background. There's a reason the Baphomet, the goat with the bobs, he's got the caduceus, he or she, they, has got the caduceus on the forehead. The caduceus, of course, the two snakes wrapped around the staff. It's a symbol of Hermes, Trismegistus, or Thoth, or Mercury. It's about magic, right? These are all the gods of magic. And it's also, in terms of alchemy, the Philosopher's Stone. All right? These are the snakes of wisdom. These are the feminine and masculine polarities intertwined, right? We talked about this many times in the past on this exact podcast. Most recently, I believe, in the Knights Templar episode on Friday the 13th of May. So, Doctor Strange, he's headed to a conference, and while he's driving, he's got an assistant talking to him about different cases that he could take on, right? And he hears about a woman who was hit by lightning. And he says, oh, that one's interesting. Now, what's interesting about that is that the lightning bolt represents Lucifer. It also is representative of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. As one traverses down the Tree of Life from God down to the earthly realm in the human prison that they call the human body, the path is that of a zigzag of the lightning bolt. Arguably, that's why Johnny Depp has that tattooed on his hand. Who's all of a sudden America's sweetheart, but we're going to do a whole show on Johnny Depp, and I will tell you why he's not the most innocent guy on the planet. I know, not a popular opinion. A lot of people think he's the sweetheart, and I'll tell you what, I watched some of those clips, and I say, you know what, that Johnny Depp's very likable. He's a funny guy. The way he's like staring at the lawyers and mocking them, I like that. I like that snark levels on fleek. So Dr. Strange, he says, that's interesting because it's Lucifer, okay? And the next thing happens is he wrecks his car. He wrecks his car, gets into a terrible accident, and the next scene, you see him in the hospital on the gurney, and he's got one eye completely closed from the accident. Well, it's about to be opened as he learns the path of the occult. And we'll talk more about the all-seeing eye later. So he gets in this accident. His hands are wrecked. He wants to fix his hands because he's like, hey, I'm a rock star surgeon. But Rachel McAdams' character, Christine, she's his, I guess, co-surgeon assistant. I don't really know. She is a surgeon, but apparently lesser than to him. she can't quite make it happen, so he starts figuring out another way. He starts dabbling around with other stuff, and he ends up going to Kathmandu to a place called the Kamar Taj, where we're introduced to a character named the Ancient One. She's there training the Shaolin monks or whatever, and she teaches people how to heal themselves with their own mind, okay? Now, all of this makes sense because if you get into any of these occult or counterculture religions, you'll find that they just love themselves some Kathmandu, some this Himalayan region of Tibet and Nepal. It's the antithesis to the oppressive Abrahamic religions and the male-dominated religions. Now, we talked about Tibet in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1. I think I screwed that up on the last show, too. Anyway, doesn't matter. One of the two alien books. Alexandra David Neal visited Tibet in 1924 to study theosophy, and whilst there, found that they subscribe to an idea called a tulpa, which is a consciously manifested entity. And this ties, and look, the Nazis were really into this area. They thought that Shambhala was there and all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of esoteric ideas that come from this region. Now, fun fact, Benedict Cumberbatch there was an English teacher at a Tibetan monastery for a year. So, old hat for him. Now, the Ancient One, she's dealing with this narcissistic neurosurgeon who thinks he knows everything. He's like, look, I know science, and this is pseudoscience, wacky, tobacco stuff. And she successfully opens his pineal gland, his third eye. She pops it open and sends him through the multiverse via astral projection. And during the scene, if you pay attention, she mentions that there is a dark force, which you see the bad guys summon a little bit later. But this is all important because this is the foundation for the second film, where he starts embracing the dark arts. So Doctor Strange, he's like, look, I don't believe this stuff. I think it's kind of wacky, but you did just send me through a multiverse and open my third eye, so I'm down to learn. So he's guided by the Ancient One and another guy named Mordo, and you see him reading through these books. If you pause the screen, you'll see that one of them is called The Key of Solomon, and one of them is called The Invisible Sun. I found that very interesting because this is, of course, part of the history of magic. The Key of Solomon is a grimoire, or a spell book, allegedly used by King Solomon himself, who was using a seal, a talisman, to control demons to build the first temple. Which, a lot of people are talking about the second film, and during the second film, we're going to talk about the end times and the eschaton, and bringing about the second rebuilding of the Temple of Solomon. Because that's what this is all about. Well, when she's teaching him, you'll hear some very interesting lessons. Take a listen to how one can achieve this Zen-like master state.
You cannot beat a river into submission. You have to surrender to its current and use its power as your own.
Well, I control it by surrendering control? That doesn't make any sense.
Not everything does. Not everything has to. Your intellect has taken you far in life, but it will take you no further. Surrender, Stephen. Silence your ego, and your power will rise. Come with me.
The instruction is for the initiate to silence their ego, to destroy the ego. And you'll see this oftentimes in a lot of these occult ideas. And right or wrong, there's a lot of good that could come from that. The idea that we are, when you talk about destroying the ego, talking about how the structures of the mind were put together by Freud. He talks about you've got the id, the ego, and the superego. The id is your reptilian instinctual brain that triggers fight or flight, that seeks rewards. You know, it's all about sex, death, life, all those things. And then you've got the ego, which is the conscious part of your brain that kind of negotiates between the id and the superego, because the superego is the social construct that says, you know, you shouldn't really do these things. You shouldn't bash that dude's head in. You shouldn't have sex and, you know, cheat on your spouse or whatever. I don't know. And the ego is the mediator that's like, oh, yeah, yeah, but I don't think I should do that. Or, you know, maybe that social construct is wrong, whatever. So to silence or destroy the ego is to sort of find a way to understand that we're all connected in this in a way. And this gets into some very highbrow conversation about who the occult people want to be like. A lot of people talk about how they embrace all elements of good and evil. Like, they're saying that's a false dichotomy. There's no such thing as bad. There's just the social construct that says, hey, these things are evil, but really nothing's off the table. Right? And that would be some of your dark arts, left-hand path type occultist. Not all of them, right? It's like white magic and black magic. Not everyone's a black magician. So anyhow, you hear about in the storyline how there's these three buildings, they call them sanctums. There's one in New York City, one in London, and one in Hong Kong. And the camartage can transport you to any one of these. They're connected, right? Now, Doctor Strange, he embraces the powers of this thing called the Eye of Amagato. And we find out through some conversation that there's another place called the Dark Dimension. And the Dark Dimension is where you can find eternal life. All right? Put that in your back pocket for a minute. What's up with the Eye of Agamotto, right? What's up with the eye, the all-seeing eye? Well, Marvel creator Stan Lee and Steve Ditko created the Eye of Agamotto in 1963, and they fashioned it to be like the all-seeing eye of the Buddha, a protection amulet against evil. And it came from the storyline. It comes from a mystic named Agamotto, who was the Sorcerer Supreme in the past, a long time ago. So when Doctor Strange gets the Eye of Agamotto, now he's got the ability. Now he's the Beef Supreme, all right? And they call it the Weapon of Wisdom, which makes sense because in the Gnostic, you know, Gnosticism, Gnostic means, now I already forgot it. Gnosticism is all about wisdom, and the Sophia means wisdom. And the Garden of Eden, the serpent supposedly is equated to these things and had the wisdom, and gave the wisdom to Adam and Eve. And he opened the eyes. It says, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So he convinced Adam and Eve to bite the apple, which gave man the fall of man and the original sin. So the eye, much like the all-seeing eye, represents wisdom. And in the Christian perspective, it is the forbidden wisdom given to us by the serpent, by Lucifer, by the snake, Satan, whatever. Okay? So we hear about this thing called the Dark Dimension. And what's the Dark Dimension? Well, what we do know about it, they say it has no time. And if you go on the Marvel fandom page, it says it's literally hell. All right? There's no time and it's hell. That's what we know. And they even say in the film that time kills everything. And they're talking about the second law of thermodynamics and entropy and all that stuff. But let's talk about this dimension beyond time. What's this a reference to? Well, it's a reference to Saturn. Yes, Saturn, the force that gave us constraints, which would be time and measurements. And this is a place, apparently, it could be argued that this is the realm of Saturn, or it's beyond the reach of Saturn. We know it's dark and it's cold. And the further out from the sun you go, obviously the darker and colder it gets. So why Saturn? Why do we talk about Saturn? Who cares, right? David Icke talked about Saturnian religions being associated with Satanism, all right? And he's not entirely wrong. Saturn, of course, being the sixth planet from the sun, and according to Icke, the source of mind control matrix signals that get sent to the moon and then repeated back down to us and broadcasted. But the actual planet of Saturn, you'll notice on the North Pole, it's got a hexagon. So you've got a hexagon, which is 6 points, six lines, and it's the sixth planet from the moon. So as you can see, there's a decent argument that this is either referred to as Satan, or the ancients knew that this was a satanic force of some kind. It brought about death for man. It brought about the concept of time and measurements and constraints. Because before that, there was no time. There was no death. And this goes into a whole bunch of stuff. You could argue that Saturn was the Earth's sun at one time. This is what they call the purple haze, because it put a purple sheath over the planet. And the ancient religions talk about there was this dark, malevolent force that knocked Saturn's beautiful purple sheath, knocked it out of place. It goes a million directions, right? The Greeks, they had Kronos. This is the god Saturn. And he killed and ate his own kids with a sickle because he was worried they would steal his power, steal his throne. And this ties into the ideas of blood sacrifice and kids and all that dark stuff. So it goes into this conspiracy, which isn't really a conspiracy, but this idea of Saturnian death cults. So none of those ideas are really far-fetched to basically sum up and say the dark dimension is Saturnian or satanic or hell or all three. Speaking of Saturnian death cults, I'm going to order some new Saturnian Death Cult shirts for my Gumroad store. So be sure to follow me on the socials for updates, or you can go to my Gumroad store and check for yourself. I got a couple sizes left. Gumroad.com/IsaacW. Link in the show notes. As always. Now, this dark dimension, which I'm basically claiming is a satanic force or hell or Saturnian, it contains this energy that they call the dark force. Now, this plays a role in the second film. So put that in your 1 week back pocket. All right. So in the film, because we're still in Doctor Strange 1, the bad guys start attacking all the sanctums. Lots of good guys die. Doctor Strange ends up mating to this magically charged cloak of levitation that he's known to wear. And we find out that the Ancient One, who is this good guy, she is immortal. And the reason she's immortal is because she pulls power from the dark dimension, from Satan. She signed the Faustian bargain, basically. And this is exactly what they were all telling Doctor Strange he can't do. They're like, you're not going to do this. Don't make that Faustian bargain. That's what Caecilius was trying to get at the beginning of the film. Caecilius being the bad guy. Now, this is occult 101, all right? The pursuit of immortality to break free from the matter, the human body, the flesh prison. That's what a lot of these Gnostics believe in. They think our spirit is trapped. Our divine spark that is actually God is trapped in these bodies on earth because God's really a bad guy to them. So to unlock immortality is to ascend, to become an ascended master. This is like the philosopher's stone of alchemy. This is the promise of the serpent for man to be like God. And she did it. And how did she do it? Through the satanic dark forces. In the dark dimension. If you watch the movie closely, you'll catch the mandatory cameo by Stan Lee, who's of course dead now. And in this film, and I'll put this photo on the Instagram, you got to see it to believe it, he's reading a book on the bus. What do you think he's reading? Is it insignificant? Did he just find a book sitting around? He's reading The Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley. Very important book in the history of esoteric occultism in America, written in the 1950s, which gave us the 1960s, which gave us a whole revolutionary time frame. The 1950s, of course, was the time of the beatniks, which birthed the hippies. Charles Manson always said he was a beatnik, he wasn't a hippie. All right. Now, Huxley wrote this book about his trips on mescaline, which allegedly Aleister Crowley was the first to introduce him to this drug. And this was a drug taken for Dionysian rituals, the orgia, to overload the mind with drugs, like the Native Americans performed, because it comes from peyote. But William S. Burroughs, Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, they were all about that action. And these were all very influential characters in the occult. Burroughs, a big influence on occult artist Genesis P. Oridge. Through my personal conversations I had with Genesis, whilst Genesis was still alive. Huxley also had written a book called The Perennial Philosophy. Very short book. Or is that... Wait, one of those is short. Man, my brain is getting mushy. It's either Doors of Perception or Perennial Philosophy. One of them is short. I think it's The Doors of Perception. Anyway, he also wrote The Perennial Philosophy, which was this whole idea of a collective global consciousness based on Hindu teachings from the Kathmandu, all right? And there's one single truth of who God is, according to this philosophy. All religions are correct. They all come from one divine source. This is ecumenicism. This is Neoplatonism. This is a topic we've discussed at length in our Matrix films analysis I did at the beginning of 2022. This is the Prisca Theologia. It's the one truth. Theosophy believed in this as well, which ties us into Helena Blavatsky, who talked about the Superman. She's the archetype of what these superheroes, her ideas and her philosophies and her beliefs, are what give us superheroes. If you listen to my lecture that I provided to you on the podcast feed, when did I do that? I don't know. 6 months ago? I talk about the occult background of all these superheroes. But this was embraced by a lot of alchemists, all these ideas, this perennial philosophy. Gottfried Leibniz, who's a guy who came up a lot in my studies in mathematics when I took differentials, I believe, he derived a lot of the equations. So this ties us into the occult sciences, which Doctor Strange is apparently all about. And here's one line from the book from... is this from The Doors of Perception? I didn't take a good note here. Sorry, this is a hectic amount of research. This is from one of Huxley's books. It was either Perennial Philosophy or Doors of Perception. It must be Doors of Perception because I don't think I have Perennial Philosophy. It says, no, this is a Perennial Philosophy idea. Oh, I am very sorry, folks. Okay, says this. That which, in the language of religion, is called this world is the universe of reduced awareness, expressed and, as it were, petrified by language. The various other worlds with which human beings erratically make contact are so many elements in the totality of the awareness belonging to the mind at large. When you read a lot of these occult ideas, they inevitably go into the concept that God's mind, God's thoughts, are actually all of us. We're all connected because we're all part of God's mind, which actually makes a lot of sense, honestly. God created our world through mental thought, through the word, through the logos, right? So everything you see, feel, hear, do, and sense, it's all God. Now, if you want to be a good Christian soldier, I wouldn't bring that up at church because I don't think that they would prescribe to such a thinking. But to me, it sounds a lot like the multiverse. And the title of the book comes from a William Blake poem, The Marriage of Heaven and Hell. And it says, if the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. Talk about limitations of the mind and not living up to your full potential. All right. Back to the movie, The Ancient One. She says, look, there's this guy Dormammu, and he is not in a place of paradise, but rather torment. He's in the dark dimension. He is the devil. He is the Satan character. And the Ancient One ends up getting shanked by Caecilius. A magical shank. An invisible shank. And she tells Doctor Strange, like, look, you're going to have to break some rules to defeat Caecilius. There's no way around it. You have to embrace evil just a little bit. Ultimately, the ends justify the means, Doctor Strange. So this dark dimension, it's consuming Earth. So Doctor Strange uses the eye to reverse time and create this repeating time loop, just like the great Tom Cruise in The Edge of Tomorrow. He keeps making Dormammu kill him, and he repeats the loop for infinity, because that's actually going to keep the Earth safe, because it's going to kind of distract him and keep him busy. Dormammu eventually gives up, and he takes Caecilius and these bad guys, and he goes back and leaves Earth alone for good. Everything's great. End of movie. Now, in conclusion, what's this movie about? This movie is about planting the seeds for part two, where we see where all the sorcery and occult practices lead. It leads to human sacrifice and black magic. Right? That dark dimension, let's talk about that a little bit more. Hell. Let's talk about hell. Sounds a lot like Aleister Crowley's Abyss as well. And Aleister Crowley described the Abyss as a gap in thought between the real and the unreal. He describes it as a chaotic place where things appear without law. There is no order. An area of insane delusions, okay? Which is kind of what it looks like in Doctor Strange 2 when he goes through the multiverse. It's a lot of insane delusions. Now, how do you get there? One way is through homo things, okay? And the idea, and that's not a diss, the idea, especially back then in the 1920s, 30s, was that one must do something that goes against what they consider acceptable. So when you are heterosexual, you would do something homosexual. Okay? Now, another way of getting there, arguably an easier way, would be through ceremonial magic. And Crowley formulates all these things. But in the Abyss is where you would find the hidden Sephiroth of Deoth. This is where the fall of man happened, okay? It's where you went from global consciousness with God, that's the perennial philosophy, the mind of God, the mind at large, down, and you descended, you went down in abstraction to the duality of man and nature. Now, the guardian of this realm is called Corone Zone. And I know a lot of you are probably like, dude, you're going way too deep right now. But I'm going to bring it back. All right, hang in there. So this demon, Corone Zone, guards this realm. But of course, we call it a demon. But Crowley's like, well, we call it a demon, but it's really just this element of the consciousness, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. If you make it across the abyss and pass this guardian Corone Zone, you become a master of the temple. And it's an achievement because if it's done properly, it will destroy the ego, which you heard at the beginning of the film. You heard about how she tells him you must destroy the ego. And also, if you're not prepared to cross this abyss, you will be annihilated. Now, what's curious is that Corone Zone, this guardian, this demon, was actually first described by a guy named John Dee in the Enochian writings. And in the in the writings, he's described, Caron's own is described as the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Yes, tying all of this together, because Doctor Strange is, of course, based on arguably two different people, an amalgamation, if you will. And one of those is John Dee, who we're going to talk about. But first, let's talk about the other guy he's based on. Pascal Beverly Randolph. I had this anonymous source hit me up, and he told me about this, and because I, you know, I study a lot of this occult stuff, and I was not aware of this. But Pascal Beverly Randolph, aka the Rosicrucian, is basically the godfather of Western occultism. And if you compare the images of Doctor Strange to Randolph, you'll see they are very similar. They do look exactly the same. Now, my anonymous source tells me that Randolph was a sex magician and the first large importer of hashish in the United States, and he was attributed with the starting of occultism in the U.S. If you go to his Wikipedia, they say Pascal Beverly Randolph, born in 1825, died in 1875, was a multiracial medical doctor, occultist, spiritualist, trance medium, and writer. Busy guy. He's notable as perhaps the first person to introduce the principles of erotic alchemy to North America, and according to A.E. Waite, establishing the earliest known Rosicrucian order in the United States. If you go to the Hermetic Library website, they'll give you more details, like how this guy's teachers include Eliphas Levi and Hermes Trismegistus. That's right, the Hermes, the god of ancient Egypt. And some of his students included Crowley himself, Theodore Roos from the OTO, and he was friends with Abraham Lincoln. Now, obviously, Crowley must have just studied his work. I mean, they call him, they say, look, his students include these people. They must have just studied his work, because I don't think the ages and the years line up for that, but that's what it says. Who am I to argue with the Hermetic Library? Now, and oddly, his enemies were included Helena Blavatsky, probably because she was racist, and Mr. Randolph was a black man. And also, they claim that he got a chain of authority through the Order of Melchizedek. Now, he was a black man, yet a member of the Great White Brotherhood. Now, these are the perfected beings who share the teachings with humanity. The Integrated Ascended Masters, a.k.a. the Invisible Church, or the Council of Light, as Carl von Eckhardhausen said in The Cloud Upon the Sanctuary. The Golden Dawn is said to have been the earth form of this brotherhood. Fun fact, Randolph grew up in Five Points, New York City, which is where they filmed the Lil Wayne, Big Sean video, My Homie Still, which was one of the first times I sort of went viral. I had watched the video, and then shortly thereafter, we had the tragedy of the Aurora school shooting, which, you know, no comment about all that right now, but a thing that goes on here in America. And anyway, they filmed part of, and a lot of the symbolism lined up to that actual event. It was very crazy. Like, they had a theater with the exact same number of skeletons and all kinds of crazy stuff. But in that video, they filmed, it was one of the last filmings of this Five Points that I think has been torn down since. So, you know, whatever. It was just a fun fact. I meant it to have fun. I hope you had fun. But perhaps most importantly, Randolph's the guy who gave us sex magic. He influenced Crowley to pursue a lot of these sex magic ideas. If you go to a website called ThelemicOrder.io, I'm going to read you from this article. Randolph's important to us is, to some extent, because his life highlights the degree to which the esoteric has always been very much connected with non-traditional mores and sexuality. Devotees... Wait a minute. No. Deveni Rosemont continues... devotes much attention to Randolph's multifarious activities in the international subterranean community of scholars, poets, madmen, and charlatans known as the occult, which, and this is two, and this too is significant, was one of the few Milu in which I keep meaning to look this word up and it keeps showing up in my face. Milu, in which serious discussion of love was possible at the time. A view which contributes to our understanding of Thelema, not just as a practice, but as a major sexual and intellectual counterculture. In his introduction, Devaney says, from the early 1860s, he was the Rosicrucian, associated in the popular mind with crystal gazing, drugs, especially hashish, secret oriental brotherhoods, and sex. He was infatuated with women from his earliest years, and also spent most of his mature life trying to improve the lot of women trapped in Victorian marriages by teaching his notions of true sexuality. Beyond this, however, and fundamentally, he was a practical occultist and a sexual magician. With a coherent and imaginative view of the universal role of sexuality, he was the forerunner of modern occultism, and it was to him, more than anyone else, that the transformation of the occult world from the 1870s through the 1890s is due. Now, he was not only sexual, he was dangerous. He was sexual and dangerous. Because he suggested that a woman should have to give consent for sex. Even to her husband, he said. Which was a radical idea back then, if you can believe that, back in the late 1800s. I guess they were just down to, you know, force their way upon all these women. I don't know. What a nightmare for women, right? So he was a very early component of the Me Too movement in a way. He was critical of the spiritualism movement going on back then, because apparently they would view seduction and rape as some kind of skill to perfect, I guess. Which was and is obviously gross. And Randolph vocalized his opposition to it. See, not all these occultists are bad. I'm starting to think they're the rational ones in the room at some point. Sometimes when I read this stuff, I think, man, these guys are way ahead of the curve. In 1873, he was worried about dying and passing on his knowledge of sex magic. He had previously written a bunch of private letters, but decided, look, I'm going to publish some stuff. I learned so much. I got to share it with the world. And that same website, you can read, it says, while he called this the secret of the Ansaria priesthood of Syria, he had written similar material since the 1850s under the term the Golden Secret, the Golden Letter, True Oriental Secret, Asgill's Rules, and the Grand Secret. Now, as the Ansaria Secret, or as printed, the Ansaretic Mystery, he would publish a core system of sex magic. And all of this came, because you're probably like, what's Syria got to do with it? Well, all of this comes from earlier people who wrote about a Syrian sex cult called the Nusairi. And they believed spiritual union could only happen through, you guessed it, sexy time, carnal union. And it was believed to have got, they got this from early Gnostics, the Cathar Gnostics, maybe. Now, that Thelemic Order website also says that the assassins derived their name from hashish was all fake news, which I previously had said on the show before when we talked about those subjects, is that's how I believed it to be, how I heard it. Anyway, but also talks about links to the Yazidi. Remember, we talked about the Yazidi as a satanic cult in the past. Anyway, we're going real deep. So that's it, right? Doctor Strange is based on this Pascal Beverly Randolph, but he's also, very briefly, we're going to talk about John Dee. And, you know, if you want to learn about John Dee, you can refer to, there's a guy named Jason Louv, who might be the expert of all experts. He wrote this book called John Dee and the Empire of Angels. Shout out Wind and Sea Coffee. They hooked me up with a copy of this book. You can check out their website and tell them thanks for enlightening Isaac with your book, Wind and Sea Coffee. And Jason Louv was on Higher Side Chats in 2018 as well. All right. Now, I'm only maybe halfway through the book. It's a big ass book. Oh my God. I don't know how much research this guy took to write this book, but I'm about halfway through. And some of the basic ideas you can get from these sources, John Dee is the father of modern medicine, because this was after the Dark Ages, when we couldn't really study science because the church had too much of a thumb down on it. And John Dee was into all this. He was a guy who basically helped popularize science completely. He was trying to understand the mind of God. There it is again, the mind of God. He's trying to understand it. And they thought they could, through observable natural world phenomenon, they could try to understand and, you know, very engineer science minded to sort of figure out the rules and then have man write new rules. That's what old-timey science was. They were trying to understand the real world because they were like, well, that's the mind of God. If we can understand that, we can create new realities. John Dee was known for being the sorcerer, the physician for Queen Elizabeth I. He's the guy who coined the term British Empire, a term he got from an angel. He was talking to these Enochian angels. He made contact with these angels that gave him the language that God used to originally speak with Adam in the Garden of Eden before it got all scrambled up. And Crowley and so on, they would use this language to make their own contact. Aleister Crowley infamously in 1917 made contact with Lamb, the first great alien to be drawn on paper. So what's the parallels with John Dee? Well, both Doctor Strange and John Dee, they're men of science and superstition, pseudoscience maybe. Both doctors, they called John Dr. D. They both used magical seals. Obviously, they both practiced magic. They both embraced this idea of understanding the mind of God to create a new reality. They both sought to bring about the end times, the apocalypse. We're going to talk about that in part two. Same thing Crowley was doing. Parsons was doing it. They want to bring Christ back. The eschaton. And all this comes through the evangelical movement, if you can believe that. They're approaching the same ends just through different means. And we actually talked about this on my other podcast, Breaking Social Norms. I have an episode about Doctor Strange where we go a little bit deeper into that idea of the end times and bringing Christ back and how all these seemingly opposing groups are campaigning for the same thing. In the Doctor Strange films, we see how he ushers in the end a few times. Like in the second one, he wipes out a whole civilization. He's like, oh, human sacrifice, it's worth it sometimes. And in the second one, you also see the prominent role of the Scarlet Woman, the Scarlet Witch. On the WandaVision show, they specifically call her the Scarlet Woman, the Whore of Babylon. It's important. That's what Crowley called his women, is the Scarlet Women. That's what Parsons used, this Enochian language from John Dee, to try to incarnate the Scarlet Woman. So he could start the apocalypse. Jack Parsons called himself the Antichrist. Why do you think he did that? And should you have any doubts, one last thing and then we're going to go. Doctor Strange was directly referred to as John Dee. If you go to Wikipedia, they talk about how it says the character has starred in several alternate universe titles. In the miniseries Marvel 1602, Sir Stephen Strange is both the court physician and magician to Queen Elizabeth I. Now, they don't directly tell you that's John Dee, but you already know because I just dropped knowledge on you. John Dee was the physician and magician to Queen Elizabeth I. All right. Oh, exhausting. But now we're going to get into the real good stuff. We're going to talk next week about Doctor Strange 2. And look, we're going to go so deep. So deep, put your butt to sleep. We're going to go deep into the Scarlet Woman, the Whore of Babylon, the Number of the Beast. That one's actually very shocking. I hope you're going to be ready for that one. Possession through yoga? Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. Darkhold black arts, America being the secret destiny of occult practices, and so much more. Doctor Strange 2, I feel like, might be the most occult movie of all time. Unbelievable. My jaw dropped as I watched it. So stay tuned, stay subscribed. And what else can I tell you to do? I don't know. I always ask you to do things and you're great and you always do them. You know where to support the show. You know how to support the show. Until next time, stay woke.